If you want to get your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. Gizmo Sapiens.
Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show 120.
Hey, 120.
Considering that we started out the year at 113, because I was re-listening to last year's New Year's resolution show, which we're actually a little early on this year, but I thought we would get the resolutions, what our predictions are and prognostications, out earlier, as opposed to last year. It was January 15th when we posted that show. But today, I'm Chris, and today I have Matt and Sean. Sean is new. He's our podcast virgin, and he's also a professor of, what does his LinkedIn profile say? I looked at it the other day.
I have no idea what LinkedIn profile says. Engineering technology.
Yeah. And automation. So Sean's actually the smart one here. He doesn't have a music degree like the rest of us. So, you know, this is our annual show that we do, where we make prognostications for the next year. And I was listening to show 113, which was our prognostications for 2017. And there are some interesting things we said. One of the things was the repeal of Obamacare, which I actually thought would, you know, a full repeal would happen. It has effectively been repealed. So we were essentially right on that one. And there weren't really many other concrete resolutions we made last year or predictions that we made that...
Trump landslide.
Sorry?
The Trump landslide.
Well, it was January 15th. We knew that he was already president at that point.
Oh, was that the year before?
Yeah, that was the year before.
Wow. No Shinobish or not.
I guess not.
I predict Ronald Reagan's going to win 49 out of 50 states.
Nice.
So... as per tradition, let's go around and we'll start with Matt, and we'll talk about what our resolutions are for the year.
I typically I make no resolutions because, you know, everybody says.
Last year you said it was 1280 by 1024.
Well, yeah. that's and I expect no changes in my resolution.
Really, you're not going to go 4K?
I don't think so. No, I'm the Luddite here. I'm the last guy I was the last guy here at this table. I guarantee you, that got a cell phone, let alone, and that was the flip phone, and that, everybody moved on to smartphones by then.
Matt's at Goodwill. Hey, this one's really cool. It's in good shape. It's only $3.
Flip it open. Flip it open.
It's the Razor.
So that's your resolution?
Yeah, I used to do all that stuff where I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to get in shape this year. And then I finally realized, you know, round is a shape, and that's enough for me.
Well, how about you, Sean?
I haven't really thought about it. I'm actually writing a book right now, so maybe finish a book. Don't get fired.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Don't get laid off.
Yeah. I've been there.
That's about it.
Well, my goal is, like last year, is to make more money, buy more tech.
Okay.
But my goal is also to buy, instead of just buying more tech because I think it's cool and then I tend to give it away when I don't use it for a while, is to buy less tech that I don't want to give away.
Be a little smarter about,
yeah,
see what you need is become a professor. You buy tech and you call it research and you can write it off.
Well, because of my job, I do get to write off a certain amount of tech. So that's the thing. But I have a lot of tech of sitting at home, like that, you know, like automation and programming projects that I'm so busy I haven't gotten to. So it's like, why am I buying more on top of that? Let's do what I play with the stuff I've got. And I have a habit of, you know, I see a cool laptop. The only laptops I really use are my MacBooks. But I'll see a cool, like, laptop and I'll go, you know, that's that's cool looking. And it has this one really cool feature on it, you know. And it's only $200. So I'll buy it. and I'll use it for like a week, and then it'll sit while I'm using the other technology, the real technology.
Right.
And so like this year I gave away one of my youngest daughter's friends, her Chromebook broke, and so we gave her an HP Spring 13 that we had laying around the house. And I'm like, you know, if you don't use them, the batteries go bad and everything else. I'm like, you can have it. If I need a new one, they're $220 over at Sam's Club, right. You know. And
that's shocking, a Chromebook broke.
She, yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of funny. You have kids who are in high school, so you know this. The amount of books that they make these kids carry around with them, and she put her Chromebook in her laptop or her backpack with her books.
Right.
And it, when she got it out at home after getting off the bus, the screen was just total.
Yeah.
So I felt pity on her. And I want technology to proliferate, so I want these kids to become dependent and think they have their own sense of privacy.
Exactly.
So, but the other thing is I think this year I want to spend more time on developing technical skills rather than developing the purchase of technology. So,
Are you saying technology alone cannot solve problems?
Really?
Just like guns can't kill people.
Well, I worked for her for like 8 years. She would go, here are the requirements to do X, Y, and Z. And can it be done? And I go, how much money do we have?
Yep.
I said, we could do anything you want to do, but what's our budget? And I think that's where I'm at this point. So for Christmas this year, I bought $72 in classes from Udemy, which is one of those online.
I've seen that, yeah.
It's a good one. They have certification classes for like AWS and Microsoft and all this. And so I bought a couple of the AWS and a couple programming classes and sit there and update my skills a little bit. So, okay, well, let's move on to our prognostications. So I'll start it off with the technical side. I believe Apple's going to make a new iPhone. I believe they're going to release new iBooks, a new version of macOS. I believe Microsoft is going to make a new version of Windows 10 or a new update, because we don't have new versions.
See, I think they're going to call it Windows 12.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because we can't count.
And I think you know, Google will make a new version of Android that nobody will see till 2019, even though it'll be released in the first quarter of 2018. But, you know, I, on a more serious note, I think that 2018 might be the first year that 2017, at least, and I mean, we live in southwestern Ohio, and I saw a lot more electric vehicles. I mean, I was shocked. I was driving up to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, driving down to Cincinnati Airport. I routinely see multiple Teslas now in the local area. And I'm not talking about cheap Teslas. You know, there is no cheap Tesla at this point.
Right.
Until the Model 3s actually ramp up production, there is no cheap Tesla. And I'm seeing those all over the place. And we talked about this in the last episode. The number of Tesla superchargers around the area is huge, and it's in places you'd never think of them. And there's like an app called PlugShare where you can look and see where all the chargers are. But even this morning, I was out and I saw a Chevy Volt. I hadn't seen a Chevy Volt ever, and I saw one, and I'm like, so, you know, they're becoming more prolific. You know, more than just seeing the Priuses or the hybrids that, you know, everybody kind of jumped on the bandwagon early on. I really think we're going to see that proliferation of electric vehicles with the true production run of Tesla Model 3s. I mean, at $35,000, while not a cheap vehicle, it's not an expensive vehicle compared to, you know, with all the features and everything you get on it, compared to, you know, a Chevy or a Buick or or anything. Although, you know, you can get an Oldsmobile or a Pontiac for steel right now.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I think the big three, the big two and a half, they until they figure out what that market is, they're kind of taking it hands off.
Yeah.
Just allowing Tesla to come into the market. But Tesla's not somebody that's really based in reality in terms of high volume manufacturing. They're just new and glitzy and stuff like that. And so if GM wanted to come crush them, they could crush them any day of the week. But they have chosen not to because GM has its own issues in terms of capital. And
yeah.
So at some point that may end up happening because Tesla cannot sustain their production in terms of money.
Yeah. Well, the thing, though, is the longer that the big two and a half allow Tesla to continue, the more production capability they've got. Because that's the issue with the Model 3 right now, is that they're in the middle of, you know, building out the plant that they've got. And they, you know, 2018 is supposed to be the year of production for them to be able to crank out. I mean, they already raised the production 5,000 cars a month.
Well, they can do production, but their price point is high.
Correct.
So their profit margin, luckily, you know, Iron Man is okay with not making a lot of profit off of these Teslas.
But I think that, and Matt and I talked about this last time, I think that's going to change with the Tesla electric semis. And the fact that they've gotten Myers and Walmart and Target and four or five other big clients already buying a volume of those vehicles, you know, with the superchargers to go with their stores, so that that will drive the production cost of the cars down, because now you have, you know, they use a lot of the same parts, and so now you can drive that cost down. Because that's the one thing that's strange about electric cars, is you look at the Model X, which is one I love. It's the crossover SUV, and then you have the Model S, which, and then you have the original Tesla, which is the Roadster. All three of those use the same electric motors and the same battery units.
Correct.
It's, and they even use the same chassis. It's the body and the interior pieces that are different in those. And even the Model 3 shares the same motors and the same batteries.
That's right.
It's just got a shorter wheelbase. So,
but those component costs have always been high also. When they started off 7 or 8 years ago in terms of component costs, they did not do the right things. They wanted to make a specialty car in a high volume environment.
Yeah.
So now they're coming back around. Now where they are putting themselves in a great position is their batteries. Their batteries, high volume, they're going to end up selling their batteries to their competitors.
Oh, absolutely.
And making money off of
them. Well, they already are.
Higher volume.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a whole bunch of what we used to call job shops, but they're custom car builders who do electric conversions today.
That's right.
That's all they do is they source batteries from Tesla.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing that's happened, too, is what's helping Tesla is that Tesla's really a energy company who sells computers and cars. And or you could call them a computer company that sells energy and wheels.
So, Sean, you're probably the one guy at this table that will have a convincing answer to this, because I know Chris and I have kind of thought about this off and on for a while now. So it takes a good hour for my phone to recharge.
Right.
Now, if I'm going to go load the family into the family truckster and go across the country,
right,
how is that going to work in an all-electric car? Am I going to drive my 500 miles, have to recharge overnight, and then keep going?
With technology today, yeah. Where there's a couple routes that can be taken on that. The electric vehicle is going to replace the short runner. So the minivans, taking kids to school, going to the grocery store, things like that, it's perfect for it. There is technology out there for fast chargers. Now,
And I believe that's what Tesla is using. That's what they call the supercharger. There's a standard charger, there's a supercharger, and then the mega charger that they're coming out with for fast charging the trucks, where they say that in 15 minutes they can charge the battery up to 80%,
right,
which on the Teslas is significant.
Right.
Because my dad wants to buy an electric car. I don't know why a 74-year-old man wants to buy an electric car, but he wants to buy one. I want to buy one, but for a totally different reason. But, like, the Model 3, which is the shortest range of all the Teslas just because it's smaller, is, it's still, you're talking, like, 289 miles on, or it's 269 miles on the standard battery, and then it's, like, 289 or 299 miles on the extended battery, the bigger battery, which you have to order separately. And you can go to a supercharger and today with any Tesla and still, and you know, go 80%. Well, all of those cars run almost 300 miles on a charge. So that means, you know, any place where you can go 2 hours in any direction. I'm not talking about Washington, D.C., where to go 2 hours is just 15 miles down the road. I'm talking, you know, out here where you could go, we could drive from Dayton to Indianapolis or Dayton to Lexington or Dayton to Louisville or Dayton to Columbus and back on a single charge without having to recharge.
But this is my shocking statement on this. I think that American culture is shifting away from the put the family in the van, let's go to Florida, let's go to Texas, let's go cross country, and going back toward, okay, let's fly, let's go shorter distances, or we don't take family vacations. I think that the culture is changing, which actually will help the alternative fuel vehicle situation.
So now, I got a new job last year, and for the first time since prior to 9/11, I actually had to go on an airplane this year.
Yeah.
If I weren't being paid to do that, you couldn't pay me to do that.
I understand that, but I just don't see a lot of my friends that have kids, they're not taking 7 or 8, you know, 100-mile trips in the family trucks.
Well, I mean,
I could be totally wrong, but that's how I read it.
Well, sure.
And then when you get there, you rent a car or whatever. There's going to be a lot more in terms of drive shares and stuff.
So I agree with you, Sean. I mean, now my career ever since graduating college has been to jump on a plane and go troubleshoot all over the world. So for me, you know, getting on a plane, yeah, is it kind of a drag a lot of times? Yeah, but is it something I can do and I know I can survive? And absolutely, because I still do it. But you're right. I mean, with Southwest Airlines kind of resetting the what is a good fare and how to book travel for your family, the amount of gas that you would spend and the amount of time to like drive down to Disneyland. You know, I remember as a kid, we hopped in the motorhome and went down to Disneyland, and you know, and it was like a 2 or 3 hour day ordeal to get down there, you know, and then if you stay a week and then 2 or 3 days back, that's your 2 week vacation. People just don't have time for that anymore. So we went to Washington, D.C. was our family vacation this year in August. We got round trip tickets for $89 a piece on Southwest. And my youngest two kids and my wife and I, we flew to Reagan, and we got an Uber at the airport, and we took the Metro the rest of the time we were there. You know, so the cost for transportation was really minimal compared to how we maximized our time, because I mean it was essentially a long weekend, but we had effectively 4 days. You know, a 4 day we had 4 days to be there, and we effectively had 4 days to do stuff in D.C. while we were there.
And
because it's a 45-minute flight from here.
So the other thing is this is not this year, obviously, but with the self-driving vehicles, there's going to have to be infrastructure built to raise that money. The only way I see that is somebody's going to tax highways, gasoline, etc. It's going to penalize people that drive gasoline cars in some way.
And that's why it'll never happen.
That's why A, it'll never happen, or B, it's artificially going to move people away from the gasoline, away from that. You know, in the toll roads and things like that, you know, national toll roads and so on. If we do something like that, that's going to raise the money for that, and it's going to force into electric alternative fuels.
But that was the thing that Matt and I've complained to Matt. I said that was always the biggest obstacle was today, you know, people, the gas tax in every state helps pay for that infrastructure. And how are they going to do it? Now, in the commercial trucking industry, they're going to tax you based on the weight and the wear and tear on the road like they do today. That's not going to change. Other than those semi-tractors are going to weigh less, so it's actually going to be less tax money from that perspective. But the fact that it's going to really hurt the, not in the short term, but in the long term, you know, I could see 5-10 years out as these electric tractor trailers, even if they're only regional carriers, start really putting the pressure on the truck stop industry. Because if I'm fueling up at you know, say, because Myers was one of the first ones, they were actually the first one. If I'm, you know, going from the Meyer Distribution Center, which has superchargers for the trucks, and I'm going to wait there while they're loading my trailer and charge, and then when I get to the store that I'm delivering product to, they also have a supercharger, which is part of their contract. All these Walmart, Target, and all them, I'm now bypassing the truck stop. You know, and so now that the services that truck stops offer may not get used like they used to, and so I think you're going to see huge contraction in that industry. And when you see a huge contraction in that industry, you're then going to see a huge contraction in the gas station industry, because a lot of those, they don't, like, gas stations don't really make money on gasoline. They make 2 to 3 cents a gallon. The rest of that goes to the jobber and to the oil company and to taxes. And, you know, they make their money on the concessions. Well, truck stops are the same way.
Well, here's the other flavor. We go to a Tesla model of trucks. The problem is it's going to put more pressure on the roads that are terrible now.
Yes.
The infrastructure in the United States is absolutely horrible. And somebody somewhere, sometime needs to do that. And force more semi. And the reason is, from, you know, 1970 to now, more and more trucks hit the road and less hit rail. You know, rail still has a very valid use, and that's in transit of product. And if you force more toward the trucking industry, yeah, it seems really cool because I'm using alternative fuels, or I'm using electric, or it's automatically guided. I can have one person, you know, drive across the country and sleep in the bed and all that stuff. But the problem is the roads are still getting damaged, the roads are getting used up, and we're not fixing the roads.
Yeah.
And bridges and overpasses and so on. And until somebody addresses that, and again, it's got to come from somebody, and somebody's got to, you know, take a step back. And, you know, does it take a war to do that, you know? Did last time.
Yeah.
From the political standpoint, part of that is we have to have politicians that understand that the gas tax is for infrastructure that's critical to transportation. And to do that, you have to stop building bike paths with that money. You have to stop doing beautification projects that are coming from the transportation budget.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Those are the things that...
But, you know, I have to add, yes, it's pretty, is it interesting as a driver to look at? Yes. But is it necessary? No. You know, a good example is like up at Fairborn where they dressed up that, you know, on Yellow Springs or Dayton Yellow Springs Road, where they dressed up the exit.
Yeah.
And, you know, has all the brickwork and the flowers planted and all that.
Don't need that. And you know that came from the transportation, right?
Yes, it did.
So...
Because they redid the ramps, which is their responsibility, is when all that happened.
If Trump was smart this year, in the first 6 months, that would be his next hit, his infrastructure. He talked about it in the election. He's talked about it before, and then all of a sudden it stopped. He needs to jump in there while he has the majority of Congress, put that on the table. That's one of the only sticks that the Democrats have to win the midterm, is that he hasn't addressed it domestically along those lines.
About 2 weeks ago, he reached out to Democrats on that issue.
I know.
And I've not heard anything.
Well, Democrats are really stealing. That's why he's got to go off the reservation, right, so to speak. Pardon the pun. and actually just do it. Throw it out there. Make the Democrats actually have to fight against what they're normally known for, which is how he won the election with the unions, right? He's fighting, you know, that. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take money. So where's the money going to come from? You know, he's got to obviously develop that.
Well, we just saved about $250 billion from the UN.
True that.
Whatever that ridiculous number was.
Yeah, we pay for the UN, we pay for NATO, yet they always want to criticize us and go around our backs to do things well.
No, seriously.
Fund it yourself.
Really just
maybe they could Kickstarter.
GoFundMe.
And the UN is going to take over the police department in Chicago, so we can save all that money, too.
Yeah. I think I'm bringing UN peacekeeping forces.
UN peacekeeping forces in Chicago, so I think we're okay. So that would be a brilliant, brilliant move by Trump. I can see him. There's my constipation right there. I see him doing something along
that sounds like. So my son is he's 18. He loves all this nostalgia, you know, the 80s, what I, you know, and
life.
So, yeah, and so, yeah, he's watching, he went to watch RoboCop yesterday, and so I watched it with him, and I hadn't seen it in 15 years, probably, or so.
The original one's good.
The original one. And I forgot how much of a spoof the movie was.
Yeah.
And how much of it was true. You know, you're talking about a movie made in 87, One of the greatest parts is so they you know interject this whole movie has these like spoofy commercials in it, and one of them is for the 6000 SUX, and it gets 8.2 miles per gallon.
Oh, that's great.
You know, and
8.2, that's pretty good.
You know, and so, you know, it was humorous how, it, you know, they're making fun, but how much, but, and again, Sean saying, you know, let the UN take over the police department in Chicago, and all I can think of is OCP Corp and from RoboCop taking over the police departments, you know, it's the same concept.
Well, there have been a couple of recent shows that talk about privatization of police forces for metropolitan areas, and I have mixed feelings on it, to be honest.
I know.
Well, here's the thing. Like, let's say Flint, Michigan, for example. They've already done what Flint, Michigan disbanded their police department. The Michigan State Patrol had to take over the police department because they didn't have enough funds. So you could very well see, you know, Halliburton coming in and saying, hey,
we can do this cheaper.
We can do this cheaper. And
probably more effectively.
Well, and you could get Bob Huggins to come back to Cincinnati, and he could take over the police department. He just recruited from the Hamilton County Jail.
That's right.
And Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah.
Who day, baby.
Okay, so let's move on from there. Because I love your perspective on Tesla.
I love Tesla pushing technology forward. I do not love them pushing manufacturing capability forward.
Yes, yes.
Now, where they also, by the way, real fast before you get off the study, their factory is one of the most modern factories in the United States. And so I'm doing research on what's called Industry 4.0, which talks about a lot of things they do in their factories. Their model is going to be used for a lot of other companies, which I think is going to help industry in the United States in competing against overseas.
Yes.
But Tesla, originally, what Doug had talked about, they imported almost
all their parts. Yes.
So this, you know, high and
the other thing that
Iron Man mentality, he was actually using 95% Chinese parts.
Yeah. Well, the Chinese and Japanese.
Yeah.
I mean, because General Motors and Ford on their electric, and Nissan even, they all sourced their electric motors from Hitachi.
Correct.
And everything. So, you know, it's not like they were buying.
They had no capital. They were going through at the time when everybody was doing that. They were getting a bailout.
Exactly.
You know, they have no money, so they have to.
But what I have been impressed with from a technology perspective, and not just the, you know, my interest on the compute side, it's been interesting in electric vehicles, particularly Tesla, and what they're doing with the AI and the the automatic driving is that, you know, they're building these really small supercomputers that essentially, I mean, that's essentially what a Tesla is today. It's a supercomputer on wheels that can move itself around.
That's correct.
And to me, that's fascinating. You know, the amount of computing cycles and how power efficient these computers are. Because I worked in the high-performance computing industry, and I still do to a degree. And so, you know, I see the top 100 supercomputers, and, you know, and you look at them, and you look at the budgets, like Oak Ridge National Laboratory gets to, so that they could be in the top five and the top 100, you know, every year, and they build some ridiculous, you know, computer, and they're spending $100 million to build this. And, you know, Tesla's building one that can do, yeah, it may not do as many teraflops as the Roadrunner at Oak Ridge, but it's doing what a year ago's computer would do, but they're doing it for, you know, $8,000, and you know, so they're really pushing a lot of industries forward. But like you said, they were buying. And that was the problem with the Tesla Roadster originally, was they were buying a lot of Chinese parts or having parts manufactured to their specs by Chinese companies, and they weren't built that well. You know, it's like
quality was terrible, yeah. And supply chain was terrible.
And if you've ever, well, and that's why Elon Musk consulted with Apple forever, because they got the supply chain piece now and quality. Because
he started with a think tank. Okay, yeah. These people came up with a great vehicle, great idea, great concept, but then all of a sudden, well, I got to make this. Oh, I need a manufacturing engineer. Oh, what kind of shit?
Yeah. But, you know, if you've ever seen the, there's a YouTube video out there where they get a Chinese-made ball bearing, bearings assembly, and then they get a precision German bearing assembly, and they spin them, and they count, and they spin them simultaneously with the same amount of force, and they show how much they spin freely, and the Chinese one stops, and the German one goes on for like another 2 or 3 minutes.
Yep.
And actually, it was still spinning when they stopped the video. But that was the difference in the quality of the manufacturing. Yet the German one cost $100, and the Chinese one cost $1. You know.
Here's his next, I think his next play is into the home market. I think he realizes, so he did a brilliant move by building a battery factory. Brilliant move by announcing the truck ahead of time. I think he goes now into the homes in terms of...
he's already doing that solar panels.
Yeah, well, I think he pushes it now.
Well,
that allows you to charge his own vehicle, but also it gets into a play that U.S. manufacturers have not done very well.
Yes. Well, and that's going to be a change. One of the things I believe is, you know, we talk about energy independence. And,
right.
And so we talk about it from a national level. You know, U.S. wants to be energy independent from the Middle East. I want personal energy independence. I want to be able to, if I don't want a Duke Energy to service my electricity, I want to be able to go out and put a system in and fully run my house. Well, the Tesla equipment is designed, and it is priced for homeowners to buy. The power walls don't cost that much.
Right.
I mean, the biggest power wall you can get, it's only $8,000.
Right.
Well,
right.
When you talk about putting that in your house, that's not much. And it's only like, I think it's like 20 if you want to have them put in their best solar roof, you know, the solar shingles, you know,
well,
to go with the power wall.
And the thing is, if you're just doing cost-effective analysis, say, okay, I'm going to charge my TV, my computer, all that, you're going to lose.
Yeah.
If you say, oh, by the way, you bought a vehicle, now I save on gasoline because I'm charging my vehicle, you win. So he's, in my opinion, if he figures that part out, he's going to be smart and say, that's how you
And he's done some things, too. Like, they just finished that, and he finished it under budget and like 3 months ahead of time. For the Australian government, they built this huge solar battery system. And came in, and the whole idea of the system was that if they had a power outage in some of these places, because Australia is like the U.S., it's big, but it's a lot more remote, too.
Remote and grid, yeah.
And they would actually, you have a power outage, you know, in some remote place, it would actually affect the power in Sydney or Melbourne or Adelaide, you know, in the main grid. And so this station he put in, it if there's a power outage, it solves that issue. It makes sure that the number of amps and the draw can remain steady without, you know, having a huge loss.
Right.
And that just happened recently, and they got kudos for that. It worked exactly as designed. And so I think you're going to start seeing him do more of those projects, which will then, because that's the same technology he's selling into the house, again, it's going to drive that manufacturing cost down.
Well, and when he offered to redo Puerto Rico, right?
Yeah.
That was a brilliant marketing move if they would have taken him up on
They should have.
They should have.
And they still should. I mean, you know, that.
Talk about infrastructure where you get money, let him take over and advertise himself.
Well, you know, that's a perfect segue, Sean. Let's talk about Puerto Rico. So I predict that just based on what's been going on now, that Puerto Rico will not be a self-sufficient protectorate, as in having electric grid, water, and all of that again until 2019. Because I personally think some of the things that are going on there is political payback.
It is.
You know, it's not like the Army couldn't jump in and they could drop, you know, airlift a whole bunch of massive generators that we use to power, you know, our tent cities in Iraq and Kuwait and Afghanistan and everything else, and get the major cities running again. And, you know, the rural areas are going to be the rural areas. Until they can get that infrastructure fixed, it's never going to happen.
The political side of the Puerto Rico thing comes down to, you had that mayor of the capital city that trashed Trump and all of that. I don't think you're going to see... You will see the political fallout from that for quite a while.
Well, I think it goes back farther than that. I think that the trashing Trump was just icing on the cake. I think it goes back to both sides in Congress getting trashed by the Puerto Ricans before that, you know, because they wouldn't allow them to become a state, which I don't think would have gained them anything. I think it would have actually hurt them in the long run, because then their GDP, well, that's right, and then their GDP would have to be something. It can't be tourism and rum, you know?
Yep.
But that's just it. They want something for nothing. They want all the benefits without any of the responsibility.
Well, you know, Puerto Rico is kind of, I think the reason it's been left the way it has is it's kind of an incubator on how the country uses it to test things. Like, well, right now it's, let's create a socialist state that's part of the United States and see how it works.
I was just going to say, it looks like Cuba Light over there.
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
Know, I don't know what's,
you know, it was not a self, there was nothing self-sufficient about it, you know. And frankly, I think the other thing is, so Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens, and we have to take care of them. But I think part of the goal, too, is that these people will get fed up and they'll have to move to Florida or, you know, the mainland, and you get a work, at least a legal workforce, to come in and replace some of these folks who are going to be out because of DACA exercising the laws that are actually on the books on immigration.
What laws? So
laws? We don't need no stinking laws.
I'm going to take the over for a different reason. Right now, in the midterm elections, it's a non sequitur. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
It doesn't affect any representative or
senator. Well, they don't vote on those people.
Yeah, exactly. From national election, it's now a Katrina. Because now I can trump up, pardon the pun, a bunch of crapola, and I can use that as Trump did not do anything domestically. Let me give you an example. Houston. Oh, let me give you an example. Puerto Rico. And I can show you the starving babies and all that stuff. So it's going to be prolonged for that reason. Katrina was a great example of how they crucified Bush for a period of time longer than what should have. In fact, I was down there last year at a conference, and there was still a sign up that said something about Katrina, blah, 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 and something about the federal government did not help us in any way. And I'm like, this is like, what, 10 years later? So I would take the over because of that.
Yeah, likely. The thing is,
or Richard Branson may buy it and it becomes an independent country.
Well, not really. He bought the island of what? Molokai?
reality of tears or whatever.
Oh, no, no, no. That was Larry Ellison of Oracle. Richard Branson, Larry Ellison, they both look alike. One has a British accent, one doesn't.
Yep, 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 yep. Did you know Richard Branson touched me inappropriately?
Oh.
I need his money.
So, yeah, let's talk about that, though, too. That's another. Sean's got the segues going. Matt, you're out. Just go ahead and leave. Sean's
stack of stuff, man.
Sean's stack of stuff.
So, what I find interesting about all of this, and some of it's true, like the Al Franken thing, there's no denying. There's pictures of him.
And he admitted to
it. And he admitted to it, you know. But I'm sure just knowing the entertainment industry and having worked in it, you know, inappropriate behavior and sexual discrimination happens all the time. The other thing that happens is you've seen it go the other way too, and I'm waiting for that whole thing of, you know, well, you know, so and so, some actress or some powerful producer, you know, seduce somebody, and you know, the difference is men are very rarely, because it's like it was a notch on my belt. Well, you know, I you know, it's like the whole issue with teachers sleeping with underage students, and it seems to actually in at least in the 21st century, it seems to be skewed with female teachers sleeping with male students, as opposed to what it was when we were in high school, when it was always, you know, you know, so-and-so band director retired, and he had a box of, the, you know, pictures of all these, you know, the drum majors and the flag corps girls. And but, you know, the curiosity is when we're going to start seeing the allegations fly from the other direction, because it's going to happen. Because fake news needs to have something to talk about, and that's a good one. But in a lot of these cases, they're allegations. You know, one of the ones that I was kind of shocked about is, and you guys probably don't watch this show, but I love the Great British Bake Off. And so they have a show. They after several seasons, they did the Great American Baking Show, which is the Great American Bake Off. Well, this year ABC only showed one episode, because after the first episode aired, one of the American judge on that show was accused, had sexual allegations. So they severed all their ties with him and all this just over the allegations. Now, so the question is, you know, when these court cases, which, because the times have been so long on them, you know, like, this has been 10 years when he like owned a restaurant. Somebody's, now you've got four women claiming that, you know, he made sexual advances and all this stuff on them. So what, the burden of proof is on them, not on him. He's the accused. And, you know, they're not going to, even in a civil case, there's much less chance of anything happening to these people if it's circumstantial evidence, because you have to prove a burden, you know, damages and burden. Well, so ABC, and they're not the only ones, I'm just using this as an example. So ABC is essentially, at least in the short term, hurting this guy's career, because now the series didn't show, he's not going to get payment for, you know, all of this. And the lawsuits that are going to come out of this, because, you know, say we're on the liberal side and we say 50% of the accused actually did it, you still, the lawsuits that are going to come about are going to be huge. And I don't understand the legal burden. It's they're making decisions based upon the fake media, because they are the fake media that potentially are going to really, really hurt them.
One of the consequences of 24/7 media and the constant drumbeat of gotta fill airtime.
Yeah.
Is the loss of presumption of innocence in this country, which is a fundamental right of all Americans. I don't think we're ever going to fully regain that. And that's a level of damage to the American psyche that I don't think it's been fully realized. take that for what it is.
Yeah. Well, so the flip side of it is this, too. I saw a statistic the other day that the amount of cord cutting that's going, like, we don't have cable at home. We do Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime, and guess what? None of those have commercials. They said that this year was the first year where kids who watch TV were not, it was like 75% less exposure to commercial ads and things. Well, you know, if you're not watching TV, you're also not getting your news from CNN and Fox and all these places. And now, on the flip side of it is also, you know, when you see those YouTube videos where they go out and they talk about this, you know. So what did you see the new one about the tax plan? And the guy makes these preposterous, and these people, only one old lady goes, he didn't say that. And she didn't even know what they really talking about, because she made some other comments that were, like, she goes, that's ridiculous. They didn't agree to that. But, you know, there's people who are like, well, I wasn't aware of that, you know. That's awful. It's like,
yep.
I mean, you do get a loss of perspective, because they're not getting, you know, there's no burden to find some other source of the news. But, you know, it's everybody wants to go back to Max Headroom days. Everybody wants their news as a blipvert. You know, give it to me in 30 seconds, and that's all I want. Which is, you know, the CNN way of doing things.
Or post a meme and put it on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the news is too complicated for that. I mean, our media is infotainment now. It's not legitimate news anymore.
Well, it's kind of interesting to look at it from that perspective, too, because where I've traveled all over the world, particularly like Great Britain, because from a cultural perspective, Great Britain and the United States culturally, for the most part, are the same. We're a country founded by England, and a good majority of our people are still of English descent. And when you go and watch like the BBC News, it's infotainment as well.
Oh, yeah.
But ours is sensational infotainment. That's the difference. Theirs is, you know, they have all these feel-good stories. It's fun to watch BBC News. There's absolutely, I won't say absolutely none, but there's so little real news in it. But, you know, it's all feel-good. It's like, you know, today so-and-so, you know, donated $10 million and gave up 40 hours of their week to go and do this for this organization. And, you know, and this family who didn't have anything gave everything they had to go and help, you know, Hurricane Katrina disaster relief or Puerto Rico disaster relief. And, you know, whereas here it's all the sensationalized because the problem is if nobody watches BBC, BBC still gets a budget because there's a tax on every TV in your house that pays for it. The good side of that is there's a lot less advertising on it because of that. On the flip side, here in the States, they got to have advertiser revenue. So, you know, they got to have something that's going to drive people to watch it so that the advertisers can get their impressions.
But, you know, this is not new. The Spanish-American War was basically created by the press.
Yeah.
And historically, journalists, in quotation marks, have always tried to control the narrative, and it was slow. So even World War II, control the narrative, right? Control what the people see, and that will help you in determining how you want to, you know, say things and go, you know, do your agenda and stuff. So it's just now there's so much of it. You know, I go back to like Rush. Was kind of the first person to create a talking show where he has news, but he's giving his opinions. Now CNN, Fox News, and MSNBC wants to do that and call it news.
Yeah.
Well, it's not news. It's an opinion show. You know, tell me the fact and then, you know, move off of it, like a headline news or something like that, which they don't do. Newspapers are gone, but that's what newspapers did, and then they threw the opinions in the editorial page. So you knew where the line was drawn at points. But then they tried to start winning Pulitzer Prizes and stuff. Okay, so now I control, oh, I can get rid of Nixon.
Yeah.
I don't like Nixon. Oh, I want to get rid of Nixon. So I can control the press to get rid of him. And so this is not new, and unfortunately the public thinks it is.
Oh, yeah.
That's what, they're a bunch of freaking germs. You know, okay, you know, I'm going to go with my wheel and act like I'm exercising. Well, no, you're not. You're staying out of my hair. So,
very true. Very true. So are we predicting that that the newspaper is going to continue to die?
I love using newspapers to wrap shit in. So.
Is that your Christmas
yeah,
wrapping paper?
I've tried to wrap it in computer websites, and it doesn't work as well.
It's really expensive, that digital paper that you have to get.
That's right. No, stupid newspapers have gone to subscription services online, which is put a bullet to their head.
Well, yeah, the whole paywall thing, you're exactly right. That's not new either. No,
it's not new, but it's stupid.
Well, it's weird how they've done it. So,
they've forgotten how to monetize the actual product.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, they think
annoying as this is, what they should do is, it's free newspaper, but I'm going to throw 18 advertisements at you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to be honest,
I'm annoyed, but I'm getting my news.
They've forgotten that the product is the news itself,
yeah,
and not the master.
What do you think YouTube is doing?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Duh.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, it's kind of funny because some services, like, you know, if you subscribe to Washington Post or the New York Times, they've been on a paywall forever.
Right.
But, you know, if you're outside of New York or Washington, D.C., you've always paid a premium for that, even when it was print paper. If you had a subscription,
oh, right. Yeah.
Because they had to ship it to you, you know, and the paywall thing, they seem to understand how to do it better. But it's the local newspapers that don't have nationwide distribution that I just don't get, like Dayton Daily News,
right?
And you know, you follow them on Facebook, you know, which was a great idea. Post your news articles on Facebook. People can follow, and then they get you reading your paper. Oh, this is the one of three articles you can read this month.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, are you an idiot?
Right.
Because I'm not going to...
The aggravating thing about that is you can glean enough from the headline that you can go to another...
Yes.
To another source.
Exactly.
Well, and there are plenty of sources, news sources, that are not... newspapers, their news magazines online that are free because they know how to monetize the business.
The TV stations are doing that.
Yes. Well, yeah, WHIO. I love that. You know, it'll be something Dayton Daily News posts, and you can go to WHIO and get it for free.
What's funny about that is that they're media partners.
Yes.
So it's the same content.
Written by the same person. Yeah.
Weather and sports. That's what they can do. I mean, that's all they're doing now. And what's the funny thing about sports is national sports, because they're cutting their budgets, are quoting Dayton Daily News and stuff like that.
So, yeah. Because they get the local coverage.
Weather, right.
You get the local coverage. Well, the other problem is so, you know, newspapers, when we talk about disruptive technologies and disruption in an industry. The web was the worst thing ever for print media, you know, newspapers and magazines. And I don't know how many times I've read stories, you know, particularly, during the 80s, and early 90s, technology magazines that was the only way you were finding out about, you know, if you couldn't attend the big conferences, you know, like the Consumer Technology Show and things like that. The only way you were finding out about it was through a magazine, you know, that you got. Like, I used to subscribe to Mac Week, and particularly in the 80s when Apple almost went away, Mac Week was probably the only source of finding out who their ecosystem is and how to get them in. And advertising in those was actually important because, you know, the people who sold stuff would actually advertise, so you had a way to get to it, you know, because there was no going and searching for, you know, online, oh, how do I... You know, can't go to Amazon and buy this. And So it was important, and some of those that were, they're still around today, figured out how to do it. But you know, it's kind of funny to watch the stories because the editors still exist, but most of the people who used to write articles and report for them don't, because you know, as they went digital, they didn't need all those. This and that's the problem with print media. Dayton Daily News, not too long ago, spent how much money to build this new printing plant down here that they're still probably paying off. And, you know, subscriptions are down. People don't, and I don't, I mean, there are times that I, you know, want to light a fire and be nice to have a newspaper. But is there other stuff that, you know, garbage around the house that, you know, packaging that you can use instead of a newspaper? Yeah. So, you know, it's not like it's just annoying. I used to go get a newspaper to do this. Now I use, you know,
right,
a cardboard box. That,
right.
But that's sad to say that, you know, that my want of a newspaper is because I want to light a fire. You know, start the charcoal grill.
Yep.
You know, I don't miss the garbage around the house. Let's just say that. So another thing that is probably really rife for disruption right now is the retail industry. Not because, I'll tell you, you're always going to have, people always want to, everybody's from Missouri a little bit. Everybody wants to see something. And that's why Best Buy, I think, still exists as a national chain. They just happen to be the last guy standing. They managed to weather the, you know, the competition to the point where they're still there. Because people, even I still like to go there occasionally. Even if I don't buy it from them, I'd like to go in the store and look at, you know, products and stuff. And frankly, they've gotten to the point where they know they have to be competitive price-wise with online retailers. So, you know, sometimes it's to your advantage to go and buy it from them. But, you know, you read all this stuff. So I think I read an article yesterday, something like between Macy's and Sears, Kmart Corporation, and, you know, and there's a list of 40 or 50 of them. They're going to close almost 7,000 retail stores this year. But the retail market, particularly at the department store level, the Macy's level, has been dying for 30 years. It's not like it's new. And I think we're just going to continue to see that as people change the way they want to purchase things. You know, and it's not like shopping centers are going out of business left and right. But
they aren't.
Shopping malls are. But what people want to go shop at are more specialty type stores. Or places where, like, you know why the Apple store is so successful for a large part? And the reason it draws in so many customers is because they do on-site repairs and they have help. You know, you can go in and get help. And that's what people want. And I think that's where the model has been missed is, you know, as customer service at all these places has gone down and it's gotten less, people are just not interested. If you think about it, customer service on Amazon is at least twice as good as customer service at a Macy's store is. So if I order a piece of clothing from Amazon and it doesn't fit, there's no questions asked. They send you the return shipping label. You just have to go and drop it off at the UPS store. And as soon as you drop it off and the tracking number gets registered, they refund your money.
So I think as 3D printing gets better and we approach replication technology more akin to sci-fi at this point, you're going to see less and less retail shopping and more online shopping that prints.
Yeah,
you don't like it? Throw it back in the bin. I think that's going to be more where we see that go. I could be wrong about that.
I can see it in certain things. I think it would be very difficult for clothing or textiles. And part of the reason I think that would be the case is you don't tend to want to wear nylon and polyester all that much. Well, we learned that in the 70s. You know, people want, you know, organic goods and things like that. But, you know, for other items, dry goods, absolutely. I've said that forever. you know, everybody's going to have a high resolution. Again, it's like the power bank, which I think, well, you know, in 15 or 20 years from now, we'll all go, do you remember when we didn't have these in our house? You know, and the same thing with high resolution 3D printers, you know, that can print with more than just PLA or I forget what the other, ABS, yeah. You know, without that, you know, I agree. I think that's going to be a big thing. I also think it's going to change the world of manufacturing, too, because goods that require complex machinery that have to be put together, I think there's always going to be a retail market for that, that you're not just going to buy it from Amazon. Small things you can buy from Amazon. Big things are not goods delivered from Amazon. The shipping charges are just too big or too great. But, and maybe if they go to a regional model, that's, you know, that's an issue too. You know, I follow the retail industry just because I think it's interesting how it all developed in the first place. You know, and you know, most people don't realize we call them department stores because they actually had departments. You know, there was the sporting goods department, the menswear department, you know, and a lot of people today call Walmart and Target department stores, but in reality, they're actually in the vernacular, they're called discount stores. You know, and that was all started by Woolworth Corporation. So, I places like where we're sitting having this podcast, and places like the Green or Kenwood Town Center, those places aren't really suffering all that much. You know. Are the stores high end in those places? In most places, yes.
The question you have to ask though is what shopping centers, what shopping opportunities were creatively destroyed when this place came online? I guarantee you, something lost in order for this to be created.
But you know, my argument to that would be, is that so.
Don't get me wrong. Creative destruction is a good thing, generally speaking.
But I would argue that there was, from an economic standpoint, we would argue that there was an area that was underserviced in the market, and so somebody took the opportunity and created this to fix that underservice. So, in this case, the Dayton Mall area suffers, and the Dayton Mall suffers because this area was created.
Yes.
But Dayton Mall could have fixed that through investment.
And they tried after the fact.
After the fact. If they'd been a little proactive about it.
Well, the problem is this place took a while to get developed and come online. Had the Dayton Mall done proactively invested in their situation, that could have thrown this development off.
Well, same thing with the Green, because you know, Dayton Mall sits between here and the Green.
Oh, the Green sits between Beaver Creek and, you know,
so yeah,
it's all up there. You know what actually hurts the most is inner city, is where have all these places been put?
Well, now we're here and there's food deserts in East Dayton and West Dayton.
There are. But, you know, I argue that is a product of not only the city government's not doing what they should have been doing, it's also a product of the citizens of those areas destroying their own area.
But yes and no, not downtown. I don't see that downtown.
Here's where we come back to our Dayton Dragons thing. If the city of Dayton wants to invest in a food mart on East 3rd Street, I'm far more willing to go along with something like that
than pay for
stadium improvements for the stadium that is the shock and awe of all minor league sports.
Well, it's
how do you get people downtown?
Yeah, but Dayton's got a whole chicken and egg issue anyway.
It really
so
does.
They have this food desert thing, even downtown. I think that didn't that last grocery store that was in the convention center or right there next to the convention center finally. It was in the, you know, the first floor of that one office building.
Arcade.
I think.
The arcade?
No, not the arcade. Because they're redeveloping the arcade for the.
With even more.
Yeah. But there was still a grocery store downtown. But they've been trying to build, you know, these as they've redeveloped downtown Dayton, they've tried to develop these condominiums and stuff, you know, and try to draw people in. Well, one, you have
subsidizing that too.
Yeah. Well, one, you have the highest tax rate in all of Montgomery County there. The highest crime rate in all of Montgomery County. You have to drive out to get access to food and other stuff and other services. But we're subsidizing and building this high end housing down there. Who wants to live there? You know, and it's not like there's jobs down there that these people work out. They're going to drive out to get to their jobs.
So let me. I have a little bit of insight into why they think that is going to work. There's a little neighborhood in, I'm going to call it downtown Cincinnati, called Over the Rhine, that they spent a ridiculous
amount redeveloping.
On.
Yeah,
the crime rate has been hushed up by the media, but it's still every bit as huge as it's been.
Well, I remember going, Dennis Farmer and I, going back to college days, we used to go to the Blue Note Club all the time, and one or the other of us would take turns driving down there, because, and we would actually pay guys who were hanging around the parking lot, give them, you know, an extra $5-$10 to watch our car while we were down there. And that's in the Over the Rhine, you know.
That's why they think it's going to work in Dayton. You have a complicit media. I don't know that we have that in Dayton, to be honest.
Well, Dayton Daily News isn't in Dayton anymore. It's almost not even in Montgomery County.
I'm not talking about the Cincinnati Inquirer.
Yeah.
The entire TV, the media industry in Cincinnati was behind Over the Rhine,
yeah,
and that entire development. I don't know that we have that in Dayton. To a certain point, we do in downtown, because that whole revitalization project has been relatively successful, and I think it's, you're not hearing about crime downtown on the evening news.
No.
You should, but you're not. You will hear about it in East Dayton. You will hear about it in West Dayton, and that's where our food deserts are, and that's, there has been no real economic development in either one of those areas in as far back as I can remember. But the Dayton Dragons moved their facility out by the VA, then talk to me about investing in that area. Where they're at right now,
oh yeah,
they need no economic development. You have the entire city infrastructure right there. That's all the economic development a town like Dayton needs. Move that out somewhere. Let's talk about developing some areas that need legitimate economic.
Yeah. Well, you know, and there are things that this, you know, the city of Dayton and cities like that could do. Dayton has an opportunity. It was easier for Cincinnati to do than it would be for Dayton, but they still have an opportunity to do it. But Cincinnati, downtown Cincinnati does not, and the east and west side don't have food deserts. And part of the reason was is because Kroger Corporation is headquartered there. And so Cincinnati City Council went to Kroger Corporation and said, look, we're willing to help you tax-wise if you help us. And that makes sense to me.
Plus, let's not forget, you have Finley Market in the heart of
downtown
Cincinnati.
Yeah.
You don't have anything like that in Dayton.
No. Used to. Used to.
Well, they've gone to yuppie restaurants that the lawyers and the, you know.
Well, there's only lawyers who work down there.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. You know, who cares? Let's talk about an area of town where there are actual people.
Yeah. Well, you know, in Dayton used to be interesting. They used to be the largest manufacturing city in the world. Not that they had the largest manufacturing plants or anything. They had the largest number of manufacturing companies in the world who were there right in downtown Dayton. All of those buildings sit empty today. Because there's not a lick of that type of work being done down there. And so you got to question, you know, why did they lose everything? And that's part of the problem. The other thing is City of Dayton support a lot. The only time that urban renewal happens is when, you know, the hobos break into a building and they accidentally catch it on fire and it burns down.
Dayton lost manufacturing. I don't know. back me up on this if you feel appropriate. This is my view of it. Dayton lost its manufacturing capabilities when they kept increasing the cost of labor through obscene union demands at the cost of an actual job. It became a much better deal for those companies to either automate or move those jobs to either a non-union state or out of the country.
Yeah.
That's how Dayton lost manufacturing. And we're not alone.
No, we know that. I don't think it's even automated. I think it's the reason automation never caught on here in Dayton was because the labor force was unskilled.
Yeah.
So I'm paying $25, and this is the honest truth. I was in union negotiations and stuff. I'm paying $25 an hour in the 90s for labor that can't read.
Yeah.
My literacy rate on the lines I supervised was 80%. So 20% of the people that I had to supervise could not read a job instruction. And so it's not the automation, because now it's coming back for the automation. Like Fuyao is highly automated.
Absolutely. Well, almost.
Highly automated. They started from the start, they used an old building, but they started from scratch. So no, you're absolutely 100% correct. Once GM went down, all those little shops downtown went down because all they were services.
Yeah.
And so one of the things, you know, the bailout, you know, was it right or wrong? I disagree with. I teach about the stadiums, but I disagree with the government giving any money to private enterprises. And the bailout was one of those things that you could be on both sides, because you're like, okay, if GM is crushed nationally, you would see what happened to Dayton and Flint nationally. And I don't think we could afford it.
I disagree with that. I don't think that any company is too big that it could happen. Would we have had a blip where unemployment went up even greater than it was? Yes. On the flip side, though, I think we would have seen other companies come in that, because the government propped up General Motors, they were able to squelch competition that would have created new jobs.
I think automotive is different. I think automotive is way different. I understand what you're saying if it was some other thing, but right now the only quote competition is foreign companies, maybe Tesla, but Tesla's not really competition. Tesla's its own entity. That's like saying, you know, Linux is competition to Google. It's not really. It's an alternative, not competition. I didn't agree with the bailout. I still don't agree with the bailout, but I can see the other side in that case. I can absolutely see the other side of that.
Because, I mean, locally, the other part of the plant that Fuyao isn't using would have been a Fisker Motors plant. But because of that, they couldn't get the plant through both.
Do you know how many automotive companies have tried to start since the 40s?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And how many are successful?
Oh, I know.
Zero. Tesla. I would say Tesla. Because Ford, GM, and Chrysler have all been add-ons from the last time a new company started in the United States was like 1925 in the automotive industry.
Yeah.
And so it's not that they crush competition. They do. It's a lot more complicated in that
sector.
Oh,
I agree.
I'm going to compete against Best Buy. Let's make an appliance store. I'm going to call it H.H. Gregg. You know, it's a lot more complicated than that. So, and Tesla's finding that out, by the way.
Oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I think Tesla is willing, because they're small, they don't have a bureaucracy when you look at General Motors and Ford, it's funny, we talk about, you know, we particularly like GM through the 80s and 90s, where we watched GM just hugely contract and all those, and, you know, and everybody would blame it. It's like blaming the president for everything. Everybody, they blamed it all on the CEO of the company. Well, those companies are such huge behemoths that the CEO is just, and in many cases, it's just the face to the name. Not, he has nothing to do with the day-to-day operations or you know. And so because of that, it's like turning the Titanic with the tiny rudder that it had. you know, it, you're not going to turn it quickly or well. But, you know, companies like Tesla, that's where they can...
That's a matter of speed. If you're talking about the Titanic going at maximum speed with a small rotor or a rudder, you're not going to effectively...
No, but the problem is I'm going to go in my diatribe again. The problem with slowing down is that today technology does not, the advances in technology, and the reason we have this whole concept of digital transformation is they happen so fast that being slow at making these decisions and getting into new markets will kill you. Yeah, even okay. If you're a big company.
So get back to me when the CEO of Apple says iceberg dead ahead. I mean, in technology, you don't see the iceberg.
Well, technology companies, to a large degree, if you look at it, the only one who is kind of what I call the way they're structured and the way they make decisions, that's how, you know, would be in the same, is if IBM had to do something super major, it would take a long time, and it already has. The fact that IBM is now just saying that they want to be a software company and not sell software and hardware is huge, and it's taken 30 years.
They're a finance company. Don't want to talk to them. I worked as a contractor for IBM. They're a finance company. They've never done hardware or software.
Well, yeah, that's true. Hitachi always made their mainframes, and other people, Lenovo actually made their x86 boxes. They just, but yeah, you're right. In that case, IBM. But IBM is the only one that can be more analogous. Most of these tech companies today, even, you know, Google, Apple, even Microsoft, they have very nimble senior executive organizations who can affect change within the corporations very quickly, because the markets that they need to stay in and the competition, the way it works, they have to be able to pivot, you know. Otherwise, you know, it would be totally different companies today doing a lot of the work that, or you know, developing a lot of the consumer electronics and the technology that we use on a day-to-day.
So the reason why I don't think of Tesla as a car company, and why
I think Tesla is a computer company or an energy company. They're not a car company. They happen to sell cars.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the guy at the Tesla plant isn't going to see an iceberg being at GM.
Correct. Yeah. But because of the nimbleness of Tesla, they want to, at the end of the day, though, one third of their product set is automobiles. Okay? I got to sell an automobile. And when I sell an automobile, that competition from price and performance and features and functionality, I mean, this is what their marketing department, that's what they're looking at, is General Motors, Ford, Nissan, Mazda, whatever. But at the end of the day, because they're nimble, they're going to be able to pivot into other markets so that they can weather the fact that they're not really competitive in the automotive market. You know, and that's where the semi industry is, because you talk about a stagnated industry. You know,
we have it here,
yeah.
Springfield. You know,
yeah,
Harbson, yeah, International Harbson.
But and I also think that the next place where you're going to see Tesla go from, you know, being able to pivot and the technology that they have and go is into agriculture and construction. You're going to see all electric construction vehicles, all electric agricultural vehicles, because, you know, it's kind of funny, the agriculture industry. The reason that, you know, Ford, which owns New Holland, you know, they've tried to get out of it for years. They sold their Ford agriculture to New Holland and then ended up buying New Holland back after a Chinese or a Japanese company tried to get, you know, rid of New Holland after it bought them. And, you know, International Harvester is now Case International. And you see all the – and John Deere. But, you know, you go out and you look at being a farmer – you go out and look at buying a new tractor, for example, and my farm's not big, so I don't need these massive tractors, but there are locally some of these 3,000-acre farms. They rent tractors because they can't afford to pay the $100,000 for this massive construction-type vehicle and then pay the maintenance on it on an annual basis. And you talk about an industry that's not because they don't make good stuff. The other thing, the agriculture industry is different, is that there's not a whole lot of designed obsolescence in their stuff. Because a farmer, if he does buy a piece of agricultural equipment, will use it forever. I mean, my oldest tractor is a 1951 Ford 8N, and I use it every day. And it's the same, I mean, it's... You're talking about a gas vehicle that is well over 60 years old, and I know people using much, much older tractors, you know, to do that work. So there's not this market like in a car market where people get tired of the way their car works or it's got 100,000 miles on it, and they, you know, they trade it in on a new car or and that astounds me because vehicle prices are so high. I could see it, you know, getting a new car if a car, you know, even a reasonable car, like, you know, just a small four-door vehicle was $8,000 or $9,000 to purchase completely outright. But, you know, that for most people, that vehicle is $30,000, $25,000. And every 3 years, they're trading it in, and, you talk about a financial disaster waiting to happen. It's this rotation of loans, you know, that they go through to...
because they brilliantly, a long time ago, just like in the housing market, I'm not buying a $30,000 car. I'm buying a $300 a month car.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how they market it. Yeah.
Well, the other thing they did brilliantly many, many years ago, so farm equipment... It's not measured by how many miles you put on it. It's measured by how many hours you run it. Well, gasoline engines should be measured by how many hours you run them, not by how many miles that you've put on the car. And so they convince people that 50,000 miles is, you know, if you're above 50,000 miles, you're going to start having mechanical issues.
Right.
When in reality, it should be, you know, at 100,000 hours.
But going back to the business part, you know, I would throw out that, you know, the Amazons of the world, the General Motors of the world, Procter & Gamble's of the world, we've got to make sure those stay stable here in the United States versus the smaller companies. You know, I like competition stuff, but you need that stability. The reason why, you know, Ford and GM have been around for so long is the way they've done their business model. Now, they written off some parts of their company, bought some other parts, and so on, but they've lasted. Can you name 10 companies in the United States that have lasted 100 years? You know, probably can't. And so...
General Motors.
Yeah.
IBM.
Yeah.
Ford.
IBM's 100 years.
Yep. Ford. General Electric. NCR.
New York Times.
So all of those companies have competitors, right?
Yeah.
But they have been stable in terms of establishing a workforce and so on. So that's, you know, next year's going to be very interesting because the economy is very good from a business standpoint. Trump set it up very favorable to companies. So certain companies will be able to take advantage of that. But are there companies out there that can absorb a hit in case it goes awry? You know, you look at Tesla stock prices are not valid. I mean, they're... Bitcoin. You look at that crapola going on now. So you're looking at a big, huge bubble that people are going to make money, companies are going to make money, and can they absorb if something happens? And so, you know, some companies will be able to, some companies won't.
So another perfect segue is the cryptocurrency market. We'll make this our last topic.
I don't know much about this.
So
I don't either. It's easy enough to fake.
Yeah.
Watch an expert.
So, you know, it's interesting.
You're talking about Canadian, right? Canadian money?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, cryptocurrency. So it was interesting. So on Christmas Eve, the cryptocurrency market lost about 30% of its value. Well, it was really the day before on the 23rd. And people were panicking and selling off. Now, if you looked at the prices versus the growth and everything, it was probably, if you looked at it compared to like more established currency markets, you would have gone, oh, this is just
correction.
A market correction. It's good work. Because on the 24th, the currency market, it stabilized on the 23rd, the night of the 23rd, and into the 24th, it regained most of what it had lost the day before. But people were panicking, and they were selling off, and there were some of the big exchanges were having to shut down trading, not because they were trying to stop people from buying and selling. They couldn't handle the amount of transactions that were going on. Or your transactions were delayed by 2 or 3 days. Because I actually had started a transaction like 2 days before, and it should have completed, and it didn't complete until yesterday, you know. But for the most part, I think the cryptocurrency market is relatively stable. And part of that is it's starting to be legitimized. So we're seeing all the big companies now having cryptocurrency funds that they're offering their investors that you can invest in now.
So organized business has joined organized crime in a currency market.
They just keep that so they can pay off the porn.
Well, so I think that's one of the uses right now. But of cryptocurrency, but they're not all cryptocurrencies are. Bitcoin is not a anonymized system. They're not doing anything to buy or sell. There are like Monero, Bitcoin. There are several cryptocurrencies out there that were designed from the get-go. That if you make a purchase, it's as close to anonymous as it can be. Now, what it is because of the use of the blockchain, it requires a little different thinking than investigators typically had trying to trace transactions. But now that they're getting a little more savvy, it's getting pretty easy because it's all based on a database full of addresses. And if they can figure out what your wallet address is, you're done, So I don't believe that that's what it's for or what's really driving the market. What I believe is driving the cryptocurrency market is the distrust that people worldwide have for their governments. And so if you have a government-controlled currency, then you have less control and less liberty yourself to do what you need to do. And in the United States, it's more of a novelty to, I think, most of the people in the United States. But I think in other places in the world, North Korea, China, even Pakistan and India and the Middle East, cryptocurrency is a big deal because it's a source of income and a source of being able to deal with financial transactions outside of a very meddling government.
So organized crime in other parts of the world could literally be legitimate business in this country. So when I say organized crime, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
And how is that any different than it's ever been in the United States?
You get no argument from me. I'm just saying.
Yeah. And as it becomes more mainstream, and yes, we're going to have bubbles and things like that. I mean, just in the short time that I've played with cryptocurrencies, I've watched the market tank like that 30-40% loss over a course of a day. And the first time it happened, my stomach got a little sick to my stomach, and I'm like, oh my God. Now, I'm not one of these people who like invested money into it, but I did invest in technology to mine it to handle transactions. Excuse me. But for the most part, I've been successful with it. And, you know, it, and again, it's one of those things where you kind of have to look at the long play as opposed to the short play.
But there's nothing different about that than the traditional stock market.
Absolutely not.
Or any other.
The only difference is
commodity.
Is in the long play in cryptocurrency could be 3 to 12 months. Where in the traditional stock market, that long play could be 1 to 5 years. You know, there are guys who are more than just paper millionaires because of cryptocurrency, and it happened in a 3 month period. And you know, so that's why you're seeing legitimate investment firms really get into what's going on, because to them it's the whole idea of well, you know, we can shorten this window to make real money. But I've always been told, and I've been told this by several investing firms and several investors, that if you have $250,000 that you can just hand to a investment firm, that within 3 to 6 months they will be handing you back, you know, $1,250, you know, or $1.25 million back. And I know a lot of people. I know people who have done that and been able to. But it kind of goes back to what you're saying about being able to weather the storm. When you invest $30,000-$40,000 into the stock market, that's too small of an entry point to have to weather a, you know, if they make a bad investment, to be able to recover from. $250,000, on the other hand, is big enough that if they make a $30,000 investment that's bad, that you have enough invested that you can recover from it, you know, in your portfolio. And I think that's where the big difference is. Is, you know, a lot of people who invest, one, they invest through their 401k. Which is stupid. 401k was never meant as retirement, and it was never really meant as an investment fund. It was just meant as a way to save some money for capital purchases after you retire, in addition to your pension. And now it is your pension.
By the way, thank you, Trump. His mind is going up. Shit.
Yeah, so is mine. And
I spent mine last year when I was unemployed, so I'm back at Donna.
Touche.
I'll be at Walmart at 82. I'm going to Walmart, dark. Get your crap and get out.
Not if you mess with Bitcoins, big boy.
Actually, by the time you're 82, you'll be a little robot there going, "Welcome to Walmart, get your crap and get out."
That's the truth.
So we'll end it there. Again, thank you guys for joining me today. And we want to hear from you, our listeners. You can send us audio, video, text to gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. Or visit our website at www.gizmosapiens.com and leave a comment on the episode you want to comment on. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.
Listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.